Welcome to The Medicine Box on CNBCTV18.com with me, your host, Ekta Batra. This podcast aims to provide insight on pharma, health and wellness, from discussing trends in the industry to key issues in health with all the relevant experts. For the fifth series, The Medicine Box has tied up with OPPI, Organization of Pharmaceutical Producers of India, the industry body that represents global pharma companies. This series will host a range of guests from OPPI. It will share their perspective on a multitude of topics, from policy to opportunities in the industry and identifying areas for development and progress. Our guest on today's podcast is Anand Narasimhan, General Manager Biopharma India of Merck Specialities and Director at OPPI. The topic today is emerging business models in pharma. Hi Anand, welcome to the podcast.
Hi Ekta, thank you.
Well, let's start with a broad sense in terms of what our topic is today, emerging business models in pharmaceuticals. Pharma has been traditionally a very traditional industry with not much change in terms of innovation, except for the fact that we've discovered many new drugs and drug delivery. But what do you think is emerging as a business model in pharmaceuticals now?
So thanks for that question, Ekta. And first of all, you know, what I'm going to be saying out here today, it's those I would say are
your views.
My views. Okay. I would not say these are OPPI's views. I'll come back to your question now. If you're looking at pharma itself, right, the core of pharma has been drugs. Mm-hmm. I think it still is that, and it will continue to be that for a fair distance in the future also, because if you're looking at the challenges that exist, right, access to high quality drugs is still a big issue. Mm-hmm. Right, and what has been changing over the last few years, if you look at what's happening outside, right, the regulatory environments are changing dramatically, right? The cost of healthcare is increasing, and if you have markets which are reimbursed, which is essentially the government is, somebody else is paying for your drugs, and then you have out-of-pocket markets, which are essentially the emerging markets like countries like India, mm-hmm. where you pay out-of-pocket, which is mm-hmm. your money. And more countries, as they progress along this continuum of development, they move towards universal healthcare. And so has India also. India has also embarked on that journey with stuff like Ayushman yeah. Bharat. So if you look at it, access is one big challenge that you do see. The regulatory landscape is becoming more and more stringent. Mm-hmm. And then the financing, the cost part, right? And these are the three key areas around which I would say pharma models have been evolving, mm-hmm. have been changing in the recent future, and will also continue to be evolving in the next few years to come. Mm-hmm. You do see a lot of changes happening across the countries. If you take, for example, from an access perspective, mm-hmm. right? So companies have been involved or engaging in stuff like risk share models, right? Mm-hmm. So essentially involving the government, involving the payers, right, and owning risk in terms of outcomes.
So linking. Can you give an example of what a risk share model is?
So essentially, a risk share model is essentially, you know, you need to bring in health economics into the picture, right? Mm-hmm. So outcomes. So for example, a traditional therapy, right? And this is again coming more from the quality perspective, right? Which is quality does bring in value. Right? Mm-hmm. How do you bring in the economics or the value add that a drug is going to bring to the overall economy, for example, mm-hmm. right? And that's something that you need to bring to the payers and tell them that, look here, which means a guy might be getting more productive much more earlier. Let's say for a cancer survivor, mm-hmm. right? Prolonging the lives of cancer survivors, right, is a big thing, right? In traditional therapies, for example, the prognosis might not be as bright, but sure. these days you have novel therapies that are coming in, more expensive, but also means that, you know, there's improvement in quality of life, people survive much longer, people are productive much more longer, which is adding a lot more value to society and the overall well-being of the countries, right? So these are things that, you know, companies need to pitch in for, which is have some skin in the game, put their neck on the block. Mm-hmm. And these are themes that have emanated. I myself was privy to something that was done in an East Asian country for my organization, right? So we worked out something quite innovative, which was okay. a first in the region itself.
Can you elaborate a little bit?
Unfortunately, that's a bit. That's why these risk share agreements are quite confidential.
Okay.
Unfortunately,
there's basically a tie-up which takes place between the government as well as the company in order to allow a drug which will probably increase longevity, improve outcomes, to come into the market.
Yes, which means again, data. Mm-hmm. You need facts. You need to prove that actually what you're saying. You need to put your neck on the block and say that, okay, this is how it's going to work. We also need some data to substantiate that it does work that way,
mm-hmm.
right? So, so there's a bit of risk that's taken on both the sides,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's a partnership that works.
How do you mitigate risk when it comes to R&D? What kind of models are emerging in order to mitigate the risk that, say, 10-year, say you bring a drug to market, mm-hmm. and it is patented, but the point is that 10 years down the line, you don't know what the side effects of that particular drug is. You're probably going to wipe out a majority of your profits being sued by patients because you didn't know that that side effect existed. So is there any sort of emerging business model in order to mitigate such a risk?
Yeah, I think we have seen a lot of press most recently, in fact, for blockbuster products earlier, which suddenly have seemed to be having side effects now, and mm-hmm. There's a lot of bad press that's coming along, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is happening, what's a more increasing trend that you do see is the generation of real-world evidence,
okay.
right? So which is essentially real-world data, right? And here it's not just a sample population, but it's actually data from thousands of patients who've actually tried the drug, have used the drug, and mm-hmm. the effects. So real-world evidence generation is becoming a lot more common.
But how does that work? I mean, you still need to use the drug to generate the evidence.
Yes. So real-world evidence is essentially once the drug has been commercialized, mm-hmm. it's been on use for a few years, and then the evidence comes into play, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that's being used more and more. That's one part of it. In terms of being more specific to your question, right, in terms of how do you mitigate that risk, right? And I think here this is where data and analytics can play a big part. I was in touch with a Swiss company and a Swiss startup essentially that worked on a lot of big data analytics. So essentially what they did was they were trying to get their identify basically early on in the stages of development. Let's say a drug is going through a phase 1 trial, you know,
mm-hmm.
and phase 2 trial. So essentially, if the drug progresses and fails a trial, it goes back to the first starting point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, their analytics software was what it was trying to do was trying to identify a much more narrow patient population,
mm-hmm.
a targeted population to whom the drug would be suitable.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So in that way, in a way, you're also cutting down on that R&D investment cost. So you're not only able to bring in your drug much more faster to the market, you're also able to cut down mm-hmm. the cost of R&D. You're getting much more niched in terms of the population you're going to address.
Mm-hmm.
Will it overall cut down on this risk that you're saying on a side effect? I don't have a very specific answer, but intuitively, if you're getting down to a much more narrow subset of a population
mm-hmm.
on whom this drug will work, it's more likely that the chance of a miss will be more minimal.
Okay.
Right? Side effects, as what you're seeing in the press, I think in a clinical trial, there's only so many patients you test your product on.
Mm-hmm.
Right? there is a likelihood that you will miss something.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think this is where technology, again, right, based on, you know, simulating. I'm just thinking out aloud out here, right? I don't even know whether, for example, that's possible right now. But this is what technology will get to eventually in the future, is that it will potentially try to simulate,
okay,
right? And see how this drug could work on particular patient groups or patient types.
Okay.
Right? So a combination of real-world evidence, a combination of big data analytics to get more specific, to get more targeted medicine to people,
mm-hmm.
will hopefully mitigate these risks that you're talking about.
What is a country such as India probably require, because 70% of our expenditure is out of pocket when it comes to healthcare.
More than that, yeah.
70% is a lot,
mm.
but if it's more than that, then we have even a graver problem to deal with.
Yep.
But in that sense, how do you think we can probably, what do you think companies are doing at this point in time to respond to it, to come out with newer drugs, to come out with drugs with good quality, which they can sell at a price which is affordable to the company as well, and also cut down the out-of-pocket expenditure?
So it's a it's quite a paradox that we are dealing with in the country. On one side, obviously, you have a big chunk of the population that cannot afford expensive or high-quality medicine. That is a fact. You have a healthcare system where, as you mentioned, the big chunk of it is still out of pocket, which is, you know, people have to pay from their own pockets. Yes, the top one-sixth of the population perhaps can, you know, afford the expensive drugs, but the big chunk of the population still cannot afford the expensive drugs, right? So out here, if you're looking at what's happening in the country, right, insurance is something that's stepping up, right? To me, that's one big step forward. Second, if you're looking at it also, is that the external environment, right? At the moment, if you're adding up the public spending, the private spending, all put together, is at a nice ballpark of around close to 4 to 5% of GDP. If you're putting in everything together, right? And if you compare these with some of the developed economies, when they went into this universal healthcare bandwagon, right, I think that was the number. So it's a good start. The ball has been has been set in motion. One of the big challenges for companies or for multinational companies is that to bring in quality medicine, right, quality medicine does come at a price. There is a value that comes in, right, but at the moment, in a country like India, the benchmark is more towards bringing more cost-effective medicine. That is a need because there's so much of population that needs the drug. Balancing it is a challenge. So if you look at it, right, can you compromise on quality to bring in the drug?
Right.
And for a multinational company, the answer would be a no.
Okay.
Right.
So there's not much of movement or leeway that that a company can have in terms of a business model in India, unless there's probably insurance which comes up and becomes much more present.
Insurance, and I think this is where innovative models, right, have to come up, have to be stepped up. So if you're thinking, if you look at
what is innovation?
No, I don't think, so innovation is something, to me, it's something you just have to look right next door. It's not something that's crazy new or something like that, right? Like if you're looking at a country like Singapore, right, it's a developed economy out there, but still it's out of pocket, bulk of the medicine spending. It's not reimbursed there. It's one of the exceptions. If you plot per capita GDP on one axis and you plot where these countries are on terms of universal healthcare, you will see that there's a very clear correlation. So as countries progress along the development continuum, they move towards universal healthcare.
Okay.
But a country like Singapore has stayed out of it. And here, essentially, they're asking people to finance their own healthcare. So, for example, out here, we contribute to our provident fund. We set aside some money, a percentage of our salary. That's what we do in Singapore. But in Singapore, when you set aside that money, there's an X amount that actually goes into something that's called a MediSave. That amount is locked out forever. For just your health.
Emergencies or...
Yes, your hospitalization and beyond that. So essentially it's taking care of your post-retirement healthcare needs are all fully taken care of there.
So maybe
it's also incentivizing the person to stay healthy there. How does it do that? It basically, what it does is it tells the guy that, look here, you stay healthy. If you don't end up spending your money in MediSave, that devolves to your children.
Okay.
So the second generation then has a larger pool of money that's available for them in terms of medicine, and that's how it is. So there's an incentive to stay healthy. And it's a new and simple model, right? It's just a small saving that's set aside.
What about, so that brings me to the point of, say, preventive healthcare and diagnostics. Diagnosing a disease or diagnosing the start of a disease so that you can prevent it eventually. Do you think that is an emerging business model which will probably even have a stronger root in a country such as India in order to prevent the kind of escalation of diseases that take place? Just catch it early.
I think there's a bit of a conflict there, right? If there's more increased diagnosis, you're going to have more
pharma
people.
Companies will make less money.
Not necessarily, actually. And this is where, you know, we'll have to reinvent our revenue models and our revenue streams also. But just in terms of disease diagnosis, if you're looking at the trends, you're seeing a lot more of disease diagnosis happening now than was 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking at the incidence of cancer in the country, I think cancer has become a very big hot topic in the country, mm-hmm. right? And it's not that the cancer patients ballooned up overnight, right? And mm-hmm. I think a big part of it is that the disease diagnosis has improved.
Mm-hmm.
People are getting detected earlier also. People mm-hmm. are getting detected later also, which means that people will need treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And so there will be a lot of preventive treatment also that will be picking up as we go. And this is an opportunity to me, as I see it, for the pharma companies also.
Mm-hmm.
It will force us to think out of the box in terms of going beyond the pill.
Right.
If you look at it these days, there might be services that we might be offering, but we don't monetize.
Mm-hmm.
We just monetize the pill.
Right.
If tomorrow, you know, the pill is going to be lesser and lesser used,
mm-hmm.
right? We need to monetize something else, and that's why you might have to monetize more and more of the other services that are there.
So these
that you're offering maybe now free.
These other services that you mentioned, which you're probably offering free at this point, or you're probably not, you've not come to that level. For example, software, artificial intelligence, digital therapeutics, in some form or manner, it's attached to your drug. For example, checking your blood pressure and, you know, your blood pressure machine, yeah. sending it to an app and the app sending it to your doctor. So your blood sugar readings are, blood sugar readings are sent directly to your doctor.
Yes.
And this becomes a part of the entire medicinal package that you're selling the customer. Is that the next way forward? Is that an emerging business model which is viable as well?
It's again, I think it's a bit of a chicken and egg thing in the viability part. You know, when does it become viable? I think eventually these models will gain more and more momentum,
mm-hmm.
as I see it. Is it something that's happening now? You already see it. It's happening, right? People are taking a stab at it. You have a lot of these companies who maybe sell fitness trackers who are now offering a bouquet of services, which includes stuff like, okay, you can maybe book a yoga session.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that, right? And they're trying to monetize all this through maybe right now what their monetization model might be, just sell a fitness tracker and maybe add something for the services.
Mm-hmm.
So these are going to evolve with time.
Mm-hmm.
For pharma companies also, right? One of the key things for at least for science-based pharma companies like us is that, you know, we rely a lot on science, mm-hmm. a lot on facts, a lot on data. Right. So,
but this is generating data as well. This is generating constant data about your patient, and then you can record it and probably use it and assess it.
Yeah. So there, I think there's a bit of the what do you call the patient privacy part is there. You know, you need to respect that, and I think that's where I think regulations, rules, laws need to be tightened up and need to strengthen up, and also allow and facilitate a free flow of information.
Mm-hmm.
Right, in a country like India with over 1 billion people,
mm-hmm.
right, there's a lot of information. So if you look at people, how many people actually use a phone,
mm-hmm.
more than half of the population has a mobile phone. Now more than half perhaps have an access to an internet connection. So in terms of the rate at which digital technology is leapfrogging in the country and is allowing industries to jump
mm-hmm.
The normal hurdles that they would have otherwise had to go through to make progress is phenomenal, and that's happening in India. You saw that in the telecom industry itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in India, we're going to see this more and more, wherein us making more use of data, it's going to become very, very critical. In China, we have already seen that,
mm-hmm.
right? In a country with a large population where, you know, there's a big gap between the demand-supply gap between, let's say, the physicians and the patients,
mm-hmm.
countries will be more open to adopting technology.
Sure.
Right? In China, the government has been very open there because they see that, look here, they have a kind of an inverted pyramid in terms of demographic,
mm-hmm.
Aging population, the cost of healthcare is ballooning.
Right.
They need to fix it fast. So if you go to a community health center there, it's packed. It's like a zoo.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to fix that problem. So they're open to the idea of, let's say, you know, a virtual rep or a virtual doctor,
sure.
right? A prescription being written out,
mm-hmm.
right? So they want to essentially reduce the burden on the healthcare centers.
So this is how we probably need to think about healthcare infrastructure in India as well.
We will have to.
Mm-hmm.
There's a huge, in India is no exception to it because we have a huge demand supply gap.
Yeah.
If you look at the number of physicians and the patients, there's a big gap.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to a hospital here, you will see it, right? The number of patients that are there, waiting there, and the amount of time that the patient gets with the doctor, itself is a big challenge.
Okay. Anand, what happens when Google becomes more aggressive, or say Amazon becomes more aggressive? They already have made inroads into the pharmaceutical right. space, but how much of a disruptor do you think it is?
Do you think they are less aggressive now?
More aggressive than what they are doing already.
Yes, it's good that they're becoming more aggressive. The good thing for pharma is that the industry is the least prone to digital disruption.
Mm.
But the bad thing about digital disruption is digital disruption can happen anytime, and then you're suddenly in this whirlpool which is going to suck you in.
Mm-hmm.
And then industries get wiped out, right? So at least pharma that way is good. The good part is it's cocooned out.
Right.
What I strongly believe is that the traditional pharma players, the strong pharma players, bring in a very unique set of capabilities to the table, especially mm-hmm. they understand this entire complex pharma world.
Mm-hmm.
The entire understanding of how things work from a regulatory perspective. And I think that's what the technology companies don't have. And pharma companies on the other side don't have what a Google or an Amazon have. And mm-hmm. I think the culmination point is going to be somewhere in between, wherein, you know, technology players and pharma players have to come together.
Mm-hmm.
So Merck has partnered, for example, with global technology players.
Sure.
Right.
So and how does that model work?
So essentially, you know, we are bringing in capabilities
mm-hmm.
to address unmet needs outside.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take the example of China, you know, you have huge patient populations
sure.
That have lots of unmet needs, right? Mm-hmm. And bringing in together two companies, which are essentially, one is bringing in the pharma capabilities, the other one is bringing the technology capabilities
mm-hmm.
to address these very specific focus topics around, for example, around access, around more cost-effective medicine
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Even drug discovery, right? Mm-hmm. So globally, we have a partnership going with an American firm, which is focused more around how we can leverage big data.
Big data.
Right. So I think it's going to be somewhere in between. You know, companies will come together. So to answer your question, if Google and Amazon get more aggressive, it's in a way good, because I think they will have to also come closer to us.
Sure. But, okay, Anand, if we had to have this conversation, say, a few months down the line, maybe a couple of years down the line, let's make it a little more long term, what would be the business model within the pharmaceutical space? Do you think that will be the traditional business model that we have, maybe with leaner costs, because that's what we're seeing? Or do you think that there will be a large part of digital, a large digital disruption, which would have already taken place and would now be integrated into business models?
So to maintain a competitive edge, we need to be faster, better, cheaper,
mm-hmm.
right? The faster part is a very clear space wherein I see that, you know, the digital disruption is really going to help. If we can cut down the drug discovery timelines, get drugs more faster to the patients,
mm-hmm.
right? That's one space, and there you're already seeing. In the US, I think they are already progressing in that direction
mm-hmm.
with a lot of use of big data and stuff like that with the companies. On the better part, right, you want more novel therapies. You want more, I would say, more precision medicine, more targeted
mm-hmm.
medicine.
Mm-hmm.
We're not hearing of a lot of blockbuster drugs these days, right?
Absolutely.
But you are hearing about a lot more of precision medicine, a lot more of targeted medicine. That's going to become more the norm in the future, wherein Anand is going to get a very, very specific drug maybe for himself in the future. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That's maybe super long drawn out. But essentially, you want to get more and more focused and more patient-centric. And the cheaper part is going to be something that we need to fix all along, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a huge, huge population in the world that's still not doing very well in terms of income.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get them good quality healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
Good quality drugs, right? So affordable drugs, quality drugs, I think is always going to be something that everybody's going to want. The supply chain is one area we're
mm-hmm.
going to see a lot of disruption in, right? So eventually, if you want to bring down costs, you need to cut down the transaction costs that are there right through from drug discovery all the way till the drug delivery
mm-hmm.
and optimizing there, driving in efficiencies there. Is going to be there. That's how eventually the drugs will become more and more accessible to more and more patients. So across all these three dimensions, we are going to see the models evolve in the future.
Okay. All right, Anand. I'm sure we're going to have this. We're going to revisit this conversation and discuss what exactly the progress would be in terms of emerging business models in pharmaceuticals. Thanks very much for joining in on the Medicine Box.
Thank you, Ekta.